Welcome to the History of English podcast, a podcast about the history of the English language and the people who contributed to that history. In the last episode, we looked at how Jacob Grimm and the other early linguists discovered a very specific set of rules to identify the way in which ancient Indo-European words became Germanic words. This included a set of specific sound changes, which also permit linguists to reconstruct large portions of the original Indo-European language. In this episode, I want to focus on one specific set of sound changes which early linguists used to classify the Indo-European languages. And I then want to digress a bit and explore this concept of sound changes a bit further. As you'll see, some of the very same sound shifts which were identified within the original Indo-European language are still reflected in certain aspects of modern English. And specifically, we can see the same type of sound shift in the modern English letter C, which is used to represent both the K sound and the S sound. Have you ever wondered why we have a letter C at all? I mean, why not just have a K or an S? Well, I'll answer that question in this episode. This is the story of the Kentum versus Satum languages and the history of the letter C. The letter C is one of the more challenging aspects of English for small children learning to read and write English, and for that matter, some adult speakers of other languages who are trying to learn English. One of the first English words that children learn to spell is cat, C-A-T, and very early on, they associate the letter C with the K sound. And they continue that association as they learn words like car, cry, cup, cow, and many, many other words. But they also learn words like city and face. And especially if they're girls, they learn to love Cinderella. So they also learn to associate the letter C with the S sound. And some words like circle and circus have two C's, one which represents the S sound and one which represents the K sound. So sometimes children ask what may seem like a pretty logical question. Why do we even have a letter C? Why not just the K or the S? Well, if we were inventing English today, or at least if we were inventing the alphabet today, that may make sense. But of course, we're dealing with a language that's been around a long time, and an alphabet that's been around even longer. So sometimes we're stuck with these peculiar rules which are tied to the history of the language and the history of the alphabet. One quick note before I go any further in this story. As I've noted before, this is ultimately a history podcast, not a podcast about the proper use of English or a podcast about linguistics. But in this episode, I'm going to talk about one particular aspect of linguistics, a specific sound change called assibilation. Now, I generally try to avoid technical issues related to linguistics, but I'm going to be discussing this particular linguistic concept in this episode. And I'll try to do it in a way that it doesn't begin to sound too much like a course on linguistics. If you stick with me through this episode, I think you'll discover a lot about modern English, and specifically the reason why certain words in English are spelled and pronounced the way they are. The story begins where we left off in the last episode, with the comparison of Indo-European languages, and the attempt to reconstruct the original Indo-European language as well as earlier versions of the existing Indo-European languages. Now, very early on, linguists noted a trend, and the trend concerned the word for hundred. You may recall from the last episode that the Indo-European word for hundred was reconstructed to sound something like kemptum, from cognates found in eight different branches of the Indo-European family tree. After the original Indo-European word for hundred was reconstructed, linguists then looked at the next stage in the evolution of the word, which were the earliest versions of the word in the separate Indo-European languages. In other words, they looked at the earliest version of the word in Sanskrit and Persian and Latin, etc. And at this point, they noticed a very distinct split. The word had changed very early on, such that there was a general split in the way the first consonant was pronounced. Some of the languages used a hard K as the first consonant of the word, just like the original Indo-European word. But other languages used an S sound for the first consonant. And this distinction is best represented by two of the oldest Indo-European languages we have for reference. In Latin, the word for hundred was centum, spelled C-E-N-T-U-M. Keep in mind that the C was always pronounced as a K in Latin. And in Sanskrit, the word was satum, spelled S-A-T-E-M. So these early linguists looked at the various words for hundred across all of the Indo-European languages, and they noted that all of the Indo-European languages which had the word for hundred that began with an S sound, like satum in Sanskrit, they were all located in the eastern part of the Indo-European speaking world. This included East European languages like Baltic and Slavic, Armenian and Albanian, as well as the Indo-Iranian languages in Asia like Persian and Sanskrit. And these early linguists then looked at all of the Indo-European languages which had a word for hundred that began with a K sound, like Kentum in Latin. And not surprisingly, all of those languages were spoken in the West. This included Latin, obviously, Greek, Celtic, and the Germanic languages. Now, if you're saying, hey, wait, the word for hundred begins with an H sound, not a K sound, remember back to the last podcast episode where we talked about Grimm's Law. This was actually one of the examples I gave to illustrate the specific sound shift which Grimm had observed. There was a later shift from the K sound to the H sound within the Germanic languages. So the Germanic languages are actually classified as Kentum languages because very early on there was a K pronunciation, but the K later shifted to an H by the beginning of the Germanic period. So let's stop and consider all of this for a moment. To the east, all of the Indo-European languages have certain words, like the word for hundred, which began with an S sound. And to the west, all of the Indo-European languages have those words, like the word for hundred, but there they consistently began with a K sound, like the original Indo-European word did. Now, based upon this division, linguists concluded that there must have been a very early split among these original Indo-Europeans. Soon after this initial split or division occurred, one group evolved a sound shift in which the original K sound in certain words, like the word for hundred, became an S sound. And this process, remember, is called assibilation. Now, as I said, this is not a podcast about linguistics, but let's explore the technical aspects of this for just a second. Assibilation basically refers to a shift from one sound to a sibilant, which is a hissing or hushing sound. And it includes sounds like the sound of S, S, or the sound of Z, Z, or the sound of a J, J, or a CH sound, Ch, or even an SH sound, like Sh. All of these sounds, S, Z, Ch, Z, Sh, all of these sounds are called sibilants. And this actually happens quite often, as we'll see. One quick example in English is the word assibilation itself, or for that matter, most of the words that end in T-I-O-N but are actually pronounced shun, like revolution or abolition. Most of these words come from Latin, where the ending was originally T-O, T-I-O. But as these words found their way into French and eventually to English, they assibilated to the shun pronunciation we have today. And that's what linguists concluded must have happened when this initial division of Indo-European speakers occurred. They also concluded that since this division broke down very cleanly from a geographic perspective, within the S-speaking Satim languages in the east and the K-speaking Kentum languages in the west, then we must be looking at a general migration pattern which occurred very early on. The Satim speakers must have separated from the original Indo-European speakers and traveled eastward, carrying their Satim dialect with them. Now, this theory was later put to the test in the early 20th century when the Hittite language in modern-day Turkey was identified, and it was identified as an Indo-European language. And also in the early 20th century, the Tocharian language was discovered in northwestern China. Now, based on some very technical aspects of the Hittite language in ancient Turkey, which, remember, dates all the way back to the Old Testament of the Bible, it was concluded that Hittite did not really fit neatly into either the Kentum or the Satim group. Generally today, it's placed with the Kentum group, but the modern view is that the first speakers of the ancient Anatolian languages, which included Hittite, probably broke away from the original Indo-Europeans before the Kentum-Satim split occurred. So these ancient ancestors of the Hittites in Turkey broke away first, and then sometime later, the early ancestors of the Satim speakers broke away and began their migrations. And there's other evidence to support this theory. As we'll see, Hittite is considered the oldest attested Indo-European language. The other discovery, the Tocharian language in northwestern China, also posed some questions because it was by far the easternmost discovered Indo-European language, being located in China itself. But it was not a Sinum language, like all the other Eastern Indo-European languages. It was a Kentum language, like the Western languages, including the languages of Western Europe. Now, this discovery surprised linguists, and it cast doubts on the validity of the traditional Kentum-Sinum distinction. But modern linguists have accounted for this discrepancy by concluding that the early ancestors of the Turkarian speakers separated from either the initial Indo-European people before the Kentum-Sinum split occurred, or perhaps from the Kentum group after the split with the Sinum speakers. They believe this group of Kentum speakers then traveled eastward, separately from the Sinum-speaking tribes. And the best evidence of this theory is based upon the location where the Turkarian language was discovered. The area where the language was spoken in northwestern China lies along the famous Silk Road, which was the traditional east-west trading route linking East Asia, Central Asia, the Middle East, and Europe. Linguists believe that the early ancestors of the Turkarians traveled eastward, more or less along the trading routes of the Silk Road, and eventually found themselves in the territory where relics of the language were discovered in the 20th century. So, at this point in the podcast, there are two things you should know. First, the Kentum-Sinum division. The fact that many linguists still make a very basic division of the Indo-European languages into two separate groups, based upon the way the word hundred was originally pronounced in those languages. And this split is believed to be based upon a very early split within the original Indo-European speaking tribes. The second thing you should know is that there was an assibilation of the K sound. Remember, the K sound, the original K sound within the original Indo-European speaking people, had shifted to an S sound within the Sinum-speaking languages. And this was a very early split. And this change is separate from the change which Jacob Grimm observed within the Germanic languages, where the K had shifted to an H sound. Now let's turn our attention to the modern English letter C. In part, this is a story about the letter C, and why it sometimes acts as a K and sometimes acts as an S. But this is also a story about sound shifts and how common they are and how regular they can be. Specifically, this is a story about one particular sound shift, the assibilation, which we've already discussed. This shifting of sounds to an S sound or Z or a CH or an SH sound, this has happened quite often throughout history. And remember that English, as much as any other language, has borrowed heavily from other languages. We have words in our everyday speech which are brand new words, words like Google, Twitter, bromance, podcast. And we have words from the 20th century, the 19th century, 18th century, all the way back to the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, and the period before the Dark Ages. We even have words which we use in everyday speech that date back to the original Indo-European speakers over 4,000 years ago. All of these words are mixed together in our everyday speech. And many of these words have undergone tremendous changes to get to the versions we have today. So this story of the letter C will help you to see how sound changes throughout history affect the sometimes quirky rules we have in modern English. So, letter C. We've seen how the K sound shifted to an H sound in the Germanic languages and an S sound in the Sinum languages. So, Latin has Kentum with a K sound, where English has hundred with an H sound, and Sanskrit has Sinum with an S sound. So, we know the K sound can shift to either of those other sounds. So, let's explore the tendency of this consonant to change over time, because we see evidence of this sound change tendency in the letter C. As you know, the letter C, when it just appears as a C, so not in combination with other letters like CH, but just as a letter C, it has two possible sounds. The K sound, as in cat, and the S sound, as in the word civil. At this point, you might have noticed a little connection. Yes, these are the same two sounds that we've just been talking about in the Kentum-Sinum division, the K and the S sound. So you might be guessing that there's some assibilation going on somewhere, and you would be correct. Let's go back in time to the origin of letter C, and it really starts with the Greeks. As you may recall from the last episode, The Greeks borrowed the alphabet from the Phoenicians, who lived in and around modern-day Lebanon and Syria very early in the first millennium BC. And it's the same basic alphabet that we have today, but it's undergone a great deal of change through the centuries. The third letter of the Greek alphabet was gamma. You've probably heard the phrase alpha, beta, gamma. What you might not know is that gamma represented the G sound, g, in the original Greek alphabet. So the initial Greek phonemes in the alphabet were actually a, b, g, a, b, g, as we would say today. The Greeks represented this third letter, gamma, with a symbol that looked kind of like an upside-down capital letter L. If you would, imagine a square and remove the bottom and the right side of the square. So that just leaves you with the top and the left side. So you'd basically be looking at an upside-down L. And that was basically the way the Greeks wrote the letter gamma, which was, again, the third letter of the Greek alphabet. And remember, it had the G, the G pronunciation. Now shift forward a few centuries to the Romans. By the time the Romans adopted the Greek alphabet, indirectly from the Etruscans, as you may recall, the sound of the third letter had eventually shifted from the G sound to the K sound. So if you pronounce both of these sounds, you can see that they're both in the back of the throat, and they're actually very similar, G and K. Some linguists think that this sound change occurred because the Etruscans, who were the intermediaries here, that they took the alphabet from the Greeks and the Romans took it from them. The Etruscans apparently did not distinguish the K sound and the G sound in their language, so the precise nature of gamma became confused during this period. And here's the key. By the time the Romans took the alphabet from those same Etruscans, they took the third letter with a K pronunciation. So by this point, the sound had shifted. So the Romans inherited this letter as a K-sounding letter. Where the original Greeks often wrote their letters with chisels on stone or wood and thus had very sharp, angular letters, the Romans by this point were routinely writing with ink. So they began to change the shape of many of the letters to a more rounded form. In fact, to the more rounded forms we have today. And they changed the shape of this third letter of the alphabet from the upside-down letter L that I described earlier to the curvy letter C that we have today. And you can kind of imagine that. If you were going to draw that upside-down L with a chisel, you know, you have to do the two straight lines. But with ink and a quill, you can actually curve that around. And that's sort of how the original letter C that we have today developed. So the Romans have modern letter C with a K sound exclusively. Now, it was not used as an S at this point. The Romans had a letter S, which represented the S sound. So at this point, everything was more or less clear. But what happened to the G sound? Well, since gamma became letter C with a K sound, that meant there was no letter for the G sound anymore. So the Romans created a new letter to represent the G sound, which became our letter G. And that's why the capital letter G resembles a capital letter C. They made this new letter, G, by taking the C and simply adding a little line at the end back towards the center to create a G. So the Romans have letter C, which remember just represents the K sound. But the Romans had also inherited the letter K with a K sound from the original alphabet. But for whatever reason, they rarely used it. They preferred to use the C for the K sound. So even though they had the letter K in the Roman alphabet, they basically relegated it to the dustbin. And that's why you rarely see the letter K in Latin words. Now, the next step in the story is the adoption of the Roman alphabet by the Germanic tribes. Remember that Jacob Grimm said that a lot of the K sounds in the original Indo-European language had shifted to an H sound in Germanic, like the English word hundred. But also remember that not all K sounds shifted to an H sound. So therefore, we still have K sounds in the Germanic languages. Now, initially, the Germanic tribes didn't bother with the Roman alphabet. Most of the early Germanic tribes didn't have writing at all. And when some of the tribes started to develop a system of writing, they used a runic alphabet, which was based on a collection of runic symbols, which many people think were probably inherited indirectly from the Etruscans as well, but the Germanic tribes, including the Anglo-Saxons, eventually adopted the Roman alphabet. And this reflected the power, especially the economic power of the Romans. It also reflects the growing power of the church in Europe, which used Latin as the official language of the church. When the Anglo-Saxons adopted the Roman alphabet into Old English, the C was used exclusively for the K sound, just as the Romans had used it. Remember, the Romans did have a letter K, which they rarely used, so the Anglo-Saxons didn't even bother with it. They just used the C. For example, the Old English word for king was kinig, and it was spelled C-Y-N-I-N-G. So, if we take a snapshot at this point in the late Roman period and in the period known as the Dark Ages or early Middle Ages, the K sound was represented almost exclusively by the letter C. The Anglo-Saxons used it exclusively, and the Romans used it almost exclusively. But after the fall of the Roman Empire, during this period in which the early Germanic kingdoms began to emerge and the Latin language began to fracture into the various regional dialects that would eventually become the Romance languages, at that point, a change started to occur. And it didn't just occur within the Latin languages or the Germanic languages. It occurred throughout all of these languages. And it's at this point that we can reintroduce our friend, a sibilation. The same sound change that occurred within the original Indo-European language to create the distinction between the Kentum and Sodom languages, it occurred again at this point. And as I said, it occurred within a variety of languages in Western Europe, including Old English, very early French, Spanish, and Italian. And these sound changes created certain confusions in the way words were pronounced and the way in which those words were spelled, which is still reflected in modern English today. And here's the key. The assimilation didn't just happen randomly. It happened in certain very specific ways in all of these languages. And in order to understand what happened here, we have to make a distinction between the various vowels. Now, as you probably learned as a child, we have five primary vowels, A, E, I, O, and U. But linguists divide these vowels into two groups, the front vowels and the back vowels. This distinction is actually very important to our story. The back vowels are the vowels which are pronounced in the back of the mouth, A, O, and U. The front vowels are those pronounced near the front of the mouth, E and I. And here's why that distinction is so important. The K sound is pronounced in the back of the mouth, like the back vowels, A, O, and U. So when the K sound preceded one of those vowels, the A, O, or U, the K sound tended to stay the same. And this was true throughout all of these languages. But when the K sound came before a front vowel, the E or the I, which remember is pronounced more towards the front of the mouth, well, at that point, the sound tended to shift to the front of the mouth, and it tended to produce a hissing or hushing sound. In other words, the sound assibilated. But the exact way it assibilated, in other words, the precise assibilated sound that was produced, well, that varied from language to language. So let's start with the K sound before the back vowels, A, O, and U. As I said, in these cases, the K pretty much remained the same as it was. And we see that in modern English words today. Words like cat, cot, and cut, all are C words where the K sound was retained before the three back vowels, A, O, and U. In fact, as a general rule in modern English, when the K sound appears before an A, O, or U in any words which were inherited from this period, the word is still spelled with its original C, and it retains its original K sound. This is the general rule which goes all the way back to the Romans. But notice what happens in modern English when the K sound appears before one of the front vowels, the E or the I. When C precedes an E, we get words like center, certain, certify, central, and cease. And when the C precedes the other front vowel, I, we get words like circle, city, circus, civil, and so on. In other words, we have the S sound. So over time, people tended to move that K sound from the throat to the front of the mouth when it appeared before the front vowels, the E and the I. And that's a sibilation, and that's what was happening to many of these Western European languages. So let's take a look at how this was happening in the various languages. And let's start with the Latin languages. In Italian, before the E and the I, the K sound shifted to a CH sound, a CH sound. Remember that the CH sound is a sibilant, just like the S sound. So we have the Latin word centum, meaning 100. That word becomes C-E-N-T-O in Italian, but it's pronounced cento with a CH sound. Also think about the word ciao in Italian, C-I-A-O, which is again pronounced ciao. So the K sound becomes a CH sound before the E and the I in many Italian words. Now let's look at Spanish. Again, we see this same process of a sibilation, except that in Spanish, the K sound becomes more of an S sound before the E and the I. So the Latin word centum evolved within Spanish and became C-I-E-N-T-O, which is pronounced ciento, with the S sound. Except in Castilian Spanish, where the sound shifted to more of a TH sound, which is another sibilant. So the pronunciation in Castilian Spanish is more like ciento. Now, Old French also experienced this change, and it was basically the same as Spanish. Before an E or an I, the K sound shifted to an S sound. So Latin centum becomes C-E-N-T in French, and it's pronounced son. And remember, this was the same sound shift from the K to the S sound that we saw earlier that distinguishes the centum in Sodom languages. So the same sound shift that had occurred within some of those early Indo-European tribes happened here as well. For another example, let's look at a word like cancer, C-A-N-C-E-R, which can refer to either a malignant tumor or a crab, as in the horoscope sign. The link between those two things comes from the crab-like appearance of swollen veins extending from a tumor. Now, in Latin, the word was pronounced canker. Remember, the C was always pronounced as a K in Latin. And we still have that version of the word in modern English. For example, the word canker sore. So that word canker comes from that original word in Latin, and it retains much of that original pronunciation. Both C's are pronounced with a K sound. But when the Latin word canker later evolved into French, it was pronounced cancer in keeping with the French assibilation. The C before the A stayed the same, remember, with the K sound because the A was the back vowel. But the C before the E shifted to an S sound because the E was a front vowel. So, cur becomes sir. So within that word, from cancur to cancer, we see the French assibilation at work. Of course, both versions of the word, as I said, have come into modern English, cancur and cancer. And here's the real importance of this French assibilation. After the Norman invasion of England in 1066, which was after these sound changes had been completed, we get the forced introduction of many French words. And as many of these words came into English, they came in with the French S sound in place of the K sound before the E and the I. So in the case of the French word 100, C-E-N-T, pronounced cent, it becomes anglicized to cent, and appears in a variety of words like cent, meaning 1/100th of a dollar, or century, meaning 100 years, or centennial, the 100th anniversary, or a centipede, a bug with supposedly 100 legs. You know, all of these words came from that same original Latin word, but it had experienced the French assibilation before it came into English, and that's why we pronounce all of those words with an S sound instead of the original K sound. But what about Old English itself? Well, it experienced its own process of assibilation. Among the Anglo-Saxons, the K sound, which remember was represented by the letter C, became the CH sound before the E or the I. And this is actually very similar to the sound change we saw before in Italian, which produced words like cento and ciao. So in Old English, we have the word R-I-C-E, which meant great or wealthy. But it was not pronounced rice like modern English. Instead, the CH sound had emerged in this context, and the word was pronounced ricce. And this is actually the original version of the modern English word rich. During the Middle Ages, when the spelling became more standardized, the spelling of the word was changed to R-I-C-H to reflect the pronunciation of the word, but more on this later. So let's explore this a little further by comparing the Anglo-Saxon language with the Old Saxon language of their cousins, which was still spoken in continental Europe. Now remember, when the Anglo-Saxons made the migration to Britain beginning in the 5th century, it appears that most of the Angles in continental Europe made this migration, because there's very little record of Angles afterwards. But not all Saxons made the migration. Many Saxons remained in continental Europe, and so we actually begin to see a distinct difference in dialects. We have the Anglo-Saxon dialect, which appears in Britain, but amongst the Saxons who remained in continental Europe, there was a separate dialect which emerged, which is known as Old Saxon. So I want to compare in a couple of words here in the Old English or Anglo-Saxon dialect and the Old Saxon dialect. And we can see, again, this sound change, how it occurred in the Anglo-Saxon dialect, but it did not occur among the Saxon dialect that remained in continental Europe. So in the case of Old English, the word I just gave you, remember, was originally spelled R-I-C-E. It's the original version of the word rich. And that R-I-C-E in Old Saxon, which remember does not have the Anglo-Saxon sound shift, was pronounced ricky with a K sound. But remember, in Old English, it was pronounced riche. So it had experienced that shift from the K to the CH sound. And as I said, that's the original version of the modern word rich. A similar word, at least in spelling, was a word that was spelled C-I-R-I-C-E. So basically that same word we just looked at, but put C-I at the beginning. So C-I-R-I-C-E. In Old Saxon, that word was pronounced Kerika, which is, again, gives both of the C's the K sound. But in Old English, we have the assibilation. So that word becomes chariche. And chariche is the original version of the word church. Again, over time, the word evolved from Old English into modern English as church, but we see the original version there with that assibilation. We also have an Old English Anglo-Saxon word spelled C-I-L-D, and that word eventually becomes pronounced from the original child, it becomes child. And that is the original spelling of the modern word child. During later in Middle English and into Modern English, the C again gets, the spelling of the word C-I-L-D is changed to C-H-I-L-D to reflect the change in pronunciation. Okay, so even though the K sound generally shifted to a CH sound in Old English before the E and the I, it didn't always make this change. And this is actually very important. Sometimes the K sound was retained. So in Old English, we have the word C-Y-N-I-N-G. Now, the Y has essentially the same characteristics here as the I, but we did not get a sound shift there. It did not become cheening. It remained keening. And keening is the original version of the modern English word king, K-I-N-G. And so you still see that original spelling, C-Y-N-I-N-G, in Old English text. But again, it retained its K sound. It did not shift to a C-H. Also, the original Old English version of the word keen, K-E-E-N, it was originally spelled C-E-N-E in Old English. And again, for some reason, it retained its original K sound. So now let's flash forward to the Middle Ages and Middle English after England was invaded by the Norman French. If we look at Middle English, and specifically this issue of the C before the E and the I, what we see is a hodgepodge of the rules we've just talked about. In a lot of the native English words, the C was being pronounced with the CH sound to reflect the assibilation of Old English that we just talked about. And again, so a word like R-I-C-E was being pronounced as riche. But sometimes the C was still being pronounced as the K, remember. So again, that word C-Y-N-I-N-G, the original version of the word king, was still being pronounced keenig with the original K sound. So in some cases, that C had shifted to a C-H, and in a few other cases, it had retained its original K sound. But then there were all of those words that had come in through French, where the C was now being pronounced as an S sound under the French assibilation. Words like C-E-N-T, which were being pronounced sent, or eventually anglicized to sent. So at that point, there were really three different pronunciations for the C. It could have the original K sound, it could have the Old English sound shift and be a CH sound, or it could have the French sound shift and be an S sound. Now, in everyday speech, this wasn't really a problem. Words were just pronounced as words. But for those increasing number of people who were literate, and the scribes who had to write down and read these words, it was a problem. If you came across an unfamiliar word where a C preceded an E or an I, how did you pronounce it? Was it a K sound, a CH sound, or an S sound? If you didn't know the origin of the word, and very few people did, you had to guess at it. So it was during this period that scribes began to adopt certain rules to deal with these issues. And they're basically the rules we have today. Remember that at this point in history, a C before a back vowel, A, O, or U, it didn't change. It remained a K sound, just as it had always been, and just as it remains today. So we see that in words like cat, cot, cut, carry, car, carpet, cap, catch, cause, calendar, and on and on. So when we have a C before an A or an O or a U, we're looking at the oldest use of the C with its original K sound, the same way the Romans and the original Anglo-Saxons used it. So in these cases, the letter C was retained because in this context, before the A, the O, and the U, all of the languages had retained the original K pronunciation. So it was clear how the C was pronounced in those cases. The C was left in place and continued to represent the K sound. But what about the C before the front vowels, E and I? Well, this is where it became much more complicated in Middle English, because there were three different possible pronunciations, as we've talked about. Middle English attempted to sort out this hodgepodge, and they did it by adopting certain spelling rules. So let's look at those. First, for many of the Old English words, which had developed the CH pronunciation, Middle English scribes assigned the letter combination CH for the sound. So R-I-C-E, pronounced Rice, came to be spelled R-I-C-H, and thus our modern English word rich. The word C-I-R-I-C-E, pronounced Charice, was reinvented with the letter combination C-H and eventually became our modern word church. And the word C-I-L-D became C-H-I-L-D to reflect its pronunciation, and thus became our modern English word child. So the scribes were reflecting the sound change which had occurred in these Old English words, which had evolved the C-H sound. And they did it by simply spelling the words phonetically, using the C-H to reflect that C-H sound. So what about those words where the C had either the K sound or the S sound? Well, to reflect the way those words were pronounced, the Middle English scribes adopted the French rules, which the French scribes had been using to deal with the same issue in France. This also reflects the overall power and influence of French at the time. So, since the French were pronouncing the C as an S before an E or an I, the Middle English scribes went along with that rule and retained the C where it was being pronounced as an S. So, sent retained its French spelling, C-E-N-T. And the vast horde of French words, which contained the letter C before an E or an I, were brought into English, and English retained that letter C to reflect the French pronunciation of S. And this is still the default pronunciation rule for C in modern English. A C before an E or an I is generally pronounced as an S. But what about those words where Old English had retained the K sound before an E or an I? Remember, a word like keening, the original version of the word king, was spelled C-Y-N-I-N-G. Well, remember, Old English only used the letter C. They didn't have the letter K in Old English. And the standard French rules of pronunciation would suggest that if you put the C at the beginning of that word, C-Y-N-I-N-G, that it should be pronounced as an S, but it wasn't. I mean, England was ruled by a keening, not a seening, or cheening. It's at this point that Middle English scribes resurrected the largely forgotten K from the dustbin. Remember that the K had not been used in Old English and was rarely used by the Romans, but the French had been using it. In fact, the French had to deal with their own sibilation issues. When the K sound switched to an S sound in French before the front vowels, the E and the I, the French had to find a way to distinguish those words from the words where the K sound was being retained. So they began to use the letter K to indicate the K sound before those letters. So the French-influenced scribes did the same thing in Middle English. They assigned the letter K in instances where the C retained its original K sound before the E or the I. So Old English keening, C-Y-N-I-N-G, becomes king, K-I-N-G, with a brand new K at the beginning. Remember, the K was inserted to eliminate any confusion as to the proper pronunciation. So today, in modern English, when the K sound appears before an E or an I, we still typically use the letter K to make that clear. So think about words like kite, king, kettle, keg. All of these words have a K at the beginning instead of a C. And the reason it has that K is to make it clear to the reader that those words are pronounced with a K sound, whereas if a C was inserted there, the tendency would be to pronounce it with an S sound. It should be noted that K is also sometimes used before the other vowels, A, O, and U, but this usually represents words that have been borrowed into English from other languages, especially Scandinavian languages. Sometimes also words that come from other sources. Think of the word kangaroo, which comes from Australian Aboriginal languages. So there you have it, all you need to know about the letter C and a sibilation. Hopefully you find that interesting, but even if you don't, the real point of the discussion was to illustrate how common sound changes are, and how common certain sound changes are among various languages. These sound changes often reflect mechanical aspects of speech, which are a product of the human mouth and the vocal cords. They're not necessarily unique to any particular language. Again, they're just a product of our human biology. So, in our next episode, we'll turn our attention back to the original Indo-European language. To this point, we've discussed how the original Indo-European language was at least partially reconstructed. In the next episode, we're going to look at the reconstructed language itself. And based upon those reconstructed words, we'll try to figure out who those original Indo-Europeans were. Today, linguists are reasonably certain that they know where and when those people lived. And based upon the archaeological evidence, we can learn even more about them. And from there, we look at how those people spread around the world, and specifically how they spread into Western Europe and led to the eventual creation of Greek, Latin, Celtic, and the Germanic languages, including, of course, English. So until next time, thanks for listening to the History of English podcast.